Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Because of movies like Jaws, sharks have become synonymous with deadly attacks. Back in 2000, Peter Benchley, the author of Jaws, said that he would never have written the book if he had known the damage it would do to the reputation of the great white shark. These fascinating creatures have been around for 400 million years, and they play a crucial role in our marine ecosystems, and they're in danger of going extinct. According to the journal Marine Policy, an estimated 100 million sharks are killed by humans every year for their highly prized fins. The fins are dried, stacked, and sold, and then processed into shark fin soup. The dish has become a symbol of prestige, especially in China, selling for $50 to $400 per bowl. But the rapid decline in the shark population has created a global campaign to protect these ancient citizens of the oceans. In 2011, California became the fourth state in the country to ban the sale and possession of shark fins. And even in China, where shark fin soup is so popular, there have been campaigns to educate citizens about sharks and ocean protection. So on today's Your Call, we are spending the hour talking about the importance of sharks and what it will take to save them. Today, we're joined by Skylar Thomas. He's founder of White Shark Video. He began filming and photographing great white sharks in 2004 as a volunteer with an ecotourism project in South Africa. Since then, Skylar has spent time with great whites around the globe. He's currently working on The Price of Existence. It's a film that exposes misinformation, politics, corruption, and financial influences that continue to plague the great white shark. And you can find more information about his film at yourcallradio.org. And Skylar joins me in studio. Hi, Skylar. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Great to have you. We're also joined by David McGuire, founder of the ocean health and shark conservation nonprofit Sea Stewards. As a research associate of the Department of Aquatic Biology at the California Academy of Sciences, David is conducting a shark research program that includes population studies, movements, and the impact of fisheries. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Rose. Great to be on your call.
Great to have you. So why don't we start off by talking about why or how you both became so interested in sharks, because you really are dedicating your life to saving sharks and educating the population or the public about the importance of sharks. So, David, why don't we start off with you? When did you become interested in sharks?
The first time I saw one. I was lucky enough to have grown up on the coastline, and I was a surfer, and as a kid, I saw a leopard shark swim by, and this was right around the time of Jaws, actually, and where most people were terrified of sharks, I paddled towards it. I wanted to check it out and to learn more, and so then I went on to become a marine biologist and now conservationist doing shark conservation because they're really amazing animals. They're beautiful. They're intriguing. They inspire us, and they're in deep trouble.
What about you, Skylar?
I wasn't as lucky as David. I grew up in Kansas. so when I saw these animals on television, it's almost like watching science fiction. It's like, these things really exist. Mm. And so for me, it started with childhood, and really, it's always been there. And I've just kind of finally realized that it was my own internal battles that I was fighting about finally doing what I wanted to do.
Well, and you're working on this film. I mean, you're for the most part spending your life savings on this film, The Price of Existence.
It's already gone.
It's already gone. Well, there is an Indiegogo campaign to help Skylar fund his film. But what's interesting is this has been a real journey for you, because the more you're learning about what's happening to sharks, the more I understand kind of shocked you are.
Well, I wouldn't say shocked, but everything I investigate leads to another chapter that needs to be investigated. And there's a reason that the name of the film is The Price of Existence. Almost everything that I'm investigating comes down to dollars.
So elaborate on that.
Okay. Well, let's take the tourism industry, which is going to be the second segment of my film. And I'm going to be going to Australia and back to South Africa, talking about the use of drum lines and fishnets that are proven not to be effective, proven to be very harmful, not just against sharks, but against any species that is unlucky enough to come into contact with them. And, you know, it's the tourism industry influencing policymakers to continue with something like this. That's one aspect of it. Another one is, David can speak better on this. He works very hard trying to get legislation passed, and you'll run into people that have authored these bills to veto them at the last minute. And why is that happening? You know, and the most disturbing thing recently is one of the challenges in my film is getting people to speak openly. And I just had a researcher get basically a gag order put on him because one of his sponsors is somebody that my film talks about. And unfortunately, he said a lot of things that were very valuable. And boom.
What did he say?
Basically, he came right out and said all the things that I was suspicious of. You know, how can it be possible that these scientists are saying that these particular methods or treatment of an animal is good? And he's like, well, it's not. And that's what I'm trying to uncover. Why are people, reputable people, at least as the public sees them, saying things that common sense tells you can't be accurate?
Well, let's dive more into that a little later in the show. But first off, David, can you kind of put this in context for us? Because it's hard to wrap your head around this number that an estimated 100 million sharks are killed by humans every year, according to the journal Marine Policy. And they say that it could actually be even more than 100 million.
Yeah, the number is unfathomable. 100 million sharks. How long can we keep doing this? That was a study by a very reputable scientist, Boris Worm, and there's a lot of criticism and skepticism and, let's just say argument and disagreement among the scientific and the policy community when it comes to sharks. We really only know about sharks when they're at the end of a hook. So Boris, Dr. Worm did his analysis of fisheries. So we're counting the dead sharks and speculating what's left, or you know, they're smaller or they're fewer. So it's very difficult to estimate shark populations. It's difficult to go out and count them. I mean, we tag sharks, and sometimes we'll never see them again. So it is an estimate. There's a huge range. The range, I think, was like between 60 million and 263 million. So this was a mean 100 million a year. So it's hard to get a grasp on, but what we do know is that we're killing too many. We know that many species, one-third of open ocean pelagic species of large shark, are threatened with endangerment. We know that local shark populations have declined from either direct impacts from overfishing or habitat loss. So I guess the take-home is too many sharks are being killed, and what used to be as a result of bycatch for tuna or swordfish or other desirable marketable fishes are now being killed for this luxury shark fin soup. And so I think that we really need to take a deep look at what we're doing to the oceans, what we're doing to even the San Francisco Bay. And sharks are symbols. Sharks are symbols of a great decline and a great degradation of our ocean. And so if we can rally around sharks, we can maybe protect some of these other species that are equally as valuable, or habitat that's critical for not only the ocean, but for human health and even the endurance of our species.
Can I expand on that?
Please.
Because three of my last interviews have been about this number, 100 million. Mm-hmm. And as David said, there's criticism of that number and arguments in the science community. And apparently the number that they're more comfortable with is 73 million. Okay, so is that sustainable? I mean, it's not shocking until we're at 100 million. I think it all comes down to our approach to these animals in general. I mean, the numbers have been devastating for decades. Mm. It's terrible. What evidence do we need to start doing what's necessary to protect these animals? Another 10 years of research? Another 10 years of fighting policymakers? I mean, it's pretty obvious that the time is now, or we're, and our oceans are in big trouble.
Well, are they mostly killed for shark fin soup?
I'd say that David can answer that better. But I'd say that that's a pretty large portion because of the method used and, you know, the long lining, the mass catches of animals. I mean, it just wipes out devastating numbers.
Where are they killed for the most part? Do we know?
Oh, I'd say anywhere that there's an ocean with sharks and someone who wants to make money off of it. David, what do you think?
Sharks are being killed worldwide. We've done DNA analysis at the Academy and sharks from all over the world. The fins, we're right here in San Francisco. Sharks are coveted now for their fins. I think what happened is after World War II, we turned our industrial might from a war on against another country to a war on the ocean. So in the last 50 or 60 years, we've taken that might and technology and applied it towards fishing. Sharks used to be killed primarily as bycatch and discarded. And quite often, if the shark is on a hook, they can survive if they're let go. But suddenly, really in the past two decades, and this is tied into the economic boom in China, we're seeing this demand for this luxury shark fin soup. So we have hundreds of millions of people in the middle class who suddenly want to enjoy luxuries that many other people do, including we here in the West. And that's really putting a price tag on sharks. So where sharks used to be caught as bycatch, quite often let go or discarded, now they're being killed just for their fins. And it is the greatest threat to shark populations worldwide, including marine reserves. I work in Cocos Island off of Costa Rica, which is a major aggregation of hammerhead sharks. And we're seeing these poachers targeting sharks for shark fins, even though it's illegal. It's actually more and more difficult, thanks to nonprofits like Petoma, Randall LaRouse, who won the Goldman Prize, is down there working to fight the government and the fisheries managers and even the judges who own shares in these private seafood companies that are selling sharks, shark fins to China. So it's a real ocean crisis. I mean, there's such a bounty that a poor fisherman can make a couple hundred bucks in a day, where he might be able to make a couple hundred dollars, you know, in a week or a month for these shark fins. But in the long run, he's killing his own economic stability and the future of his children's ability to be fishermen, because sharks have critical roles in ocean ecosystems. And when you remove them, you have a cascade effect. The whole system falls apart. So by keeping sharks alive, they're worth far more of that. They're worth far more money alive than they are dead.
You know, it seems like in the last couple of years, there's been so much more awareness, especially because of the shark fin bans, or at least the legislation that we're seeing. And, I mean, you've got, like, Hong Kong represents 50% of the shark fin trade, and they've officially banned shark fin soup at official functions. India banned shark finning. The EU has a shark finning ban. Here in California, we've got one. We're the fourth state in the country, Hawaii, Oregon, and Washington. They're trying to ban shark finning in New Zealand. I mean, there's stuff going on around the globe. Is this making a difference, and how are these laws being enforced? What are your thoughts, Skyler?
I think you have to say it's making a difference. Awareness is important. You know, if you don't know that there's a problem, no one's going to do anything about it. But the next step is how do we actually enforce any of the laws that are out there, because there are marine protected areas that are these animals are already supposed to be safe in, and quite frankly, they aren't safe. And some of the interviews I've conducted where the people will be able to be quoted talk about how they've turned in video evidence saying, look, here's what they're doing, and this is being done right here in such as the Cocos Islands, like David mentioned, or Socorro. And there's just excuse after excuse. Oh, sorry, we have to be there right when it happens. That's not realistic. It's not going to happen unless you have a budget that's going to deploy a fleet that can be there at all times. You're talking about people that are making a small wage on the boat going around. And if you think that they aren't susceptible to being paid off, then I don't think you're accepting all the realistic possibilities.
That is Skyler Thomas. He's currently working on a film, The Price of Existence. It exposes misinformation, politics, corruption, and financial influences that continue to plague the great white shark. You can find information and watch the trailer at yourcallradio.org. David McGuire is founder of the Ocean Health and Shark Conservation nonprofit Sea Stewards. He's also a research associate of the Department of Aquatic Biology at the California Academy of Sciences. And today we're talking about the importance of sharks. We'll talk about the history of sharks, the lifespan, what makes these creatures so amazing, and why they play such a crucial role in the ocean, and what we can do to save them. And if you have any questions or comments for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. If you work with sharks or you do any kind of conservation work, what are your thoughts about the awareness that's being raised and how that's changing thinking? Because the fact of the matter is, and Peter Benchley, the author of Jaws, says, you know, dolphins have these permanent smiles. There's the Save the Whale campaign. But Save the Sharks just doesn't, it's not the same. You really have to do a lot of education because of the damage that these movies like Jaws has done. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from David in San Francisco. Hi, David.
Hi. I just wanted to ask first two questions. One, at the beginning of the introduction, the prices were quoted from $50 to $400. I know you can get a hamburger in Las Vegas. It's from Kobe Beef for an exorbitant amount of money, or you may have a party of 10 that are sharing shark's fin soup. The first question is, what is the price difference that you were quoting for shark fin soup? And secondly, how many sharks are out in the oceans of the world, and what percentage are we talking about when we talk about 100 million killed?
All right, thank you. David, do you want to take that? We found the $50 to $400 quote in various articles and various reports.
Yeah, well, it depends on the restaurant, depends on the chef. I was just in Hong Kong, and high-end restaurants, it's very high, but more commonly, I've seen it on menus in every restaurant in Hong Kong, and it's $100 a bowl. So it depends on, you know, if you go to the finest restaurant, it's going to be much higher. You can actually go to the lower-end diners, and it's going to have a lower quality fin. So for the fin from a smaller shark or least desirable, the higher end is probably from a hammerhead shark or an oceanic white-tip shark that have what they call a higher thread count, which is the more cartilage fiber in the fin. So it ranges because of just the chef. Speaking to the population, again, it's discouraging that we don't know what percentage of sharks are swimming in the ocean. We know we're killing too many because we're seeing populations crash. We're seeing fisheries close down because we've fished the sharks out. We used to have a commercial fishery here in San Francisco for two species of sharks that we're studying now. We don't know how many of these soupfin or seven-gill sharks are in the San Francisco Bay. Try to multiply that towards the great ocean where it's, you know, the 71% of the planet, the deepest places. We don't know how many sharks there are. But we do know that many populations are threatened. There are about anywhere between 450 and 500 species of what we consider the sharks, the true sharks. Among those, over 100 are vulnerable or threatened with endangerment. Over half of those are data deficient. So herein lies the rub. We don't know. What we do know is we're killing too many, and we're seeing the adverse effects in local ecosystems and probably in the pelagic, the open ocean systems as well.
Someone called in who couldn't stand the line who wanted to know more about how they harvest shark fin soup. Can you talk about that, David?
How they
cut off the fins and throw the shark back in the water?
This is what inspired me to found Sea Stewards, which is now Shark Stewards under the Earth Island Institute, dedicated totally to restoring the health of the ocean by protecting sharks. I witnessed this on an expedition in the South Pacific, diving on coral reefs with hundreds of sharks, just beautiful ecosystems. And then we visited other islands that had no sharks, and the system looked degraded. And I learned that people were going out and killing the sharks just for their fins. So they catch the shark, they cut the fins off and discard the body over the side. It's a cruel, it's a wasteful death of an animal that's very important as an apex predator. And these are just because the fins are so valuable. The meat is not. So the meat might bring pennies on the pound, whereas the fins are hundreds of dollars a pound. So when you see this, when you see a shark in the wild, how beautiful they are, and also how important they are. I mean, I'm not a shark hugger. I just think sharks are really cool, and they're beautiful, but they're also essential for the health and balance of an ocean ecosystem. So by loving sharks, you're loving tuna, you're loving coral reefs, you're loving eelgrass beds, you're loving all the things that we love to do in the ocean. So protecting sharks is going to protect all those things. And that's really what inspires me to go out and to continue to raise awareness, as you said earlier. And to touch another point, yes, we are making a huge difference. The government of China and the government of Hong Kong have dropped it from their official menus. Does that mean they're going to stop eating it? No, they're still going to continue eating it, but they can't eat it at government functions. And that sends a big message out that it's really no longer de rigueur, it's no longer cool to consume shark fin soup. And if we can change people's attitudes here in San Francisco as well, but also in the East where most of the people are consuming shark fin, we can actually make a huge difference for the health of shark populations and the ocean. And I've seen a huge change within 10 years. It's amazing. It's inspiring. It's hopeful. But we still have a lot of work to do.
Peter Knights, the executive director of WildAid, said that over the last, just in the last 2 years, consumption of shark fin soup in China is down by 50 to 70%. I mean, that's huge.
It is huge, and I kind of question that number. The problem is they're no longer letting scientists or graduate students like Shelley Clark, where the $73 million a year came from, in to look at the records. So these numbers are coming from the government and they're coming from the industry. So I'm very skeptical. We were just in Shark Fin Alley in Hong Kong, and every shop is jammed cheek by jowl with shark fin. It's spilling out onto the streets. And what we're learning is that a lot of these shark fins are not even the ones they want. They buy them, but really they're coveting a few major species, but they'll buy these shark fins. So these shark fins are flooding into these vendors, and they might not even get consumed. They might just be wasted.
You know, what do the locals say, David, when you ask them questions about the shark fins? Because in the Cove, which is about the dolphins that are being slaughtered in Taiji, Japan, when the filmmakers went just to the average person on the street, people just had no idea this was happening.
Right. I mean, WildAid has done a lot of great work in Asia, and you know, when people are surveyed, many don't know that it comes from a shark. They call it, the translation is fish wing soup. And many think that the fin grows back like a starfish. That's crazy. The animal dies. They need those fins. So there's a lot of ignorance. And that's why films like Skyler's, some of the film production that we have done, and we had our film Shark Stewards on Chinese TV translated. So we can educate those people. I think we're going to see that they'll say no to shark fin soup, and it's a huge task, but it's doable. It's definitely achievable.
Back when we were fighting to get the shark fin ban passed here, it became really evident to me how important awareness was, because here we are in California, a progressive state, and at any of the events that I was holding, and I had the petition out to sign for it, people are like, well, where is this for? They're like, that's not allowed here, is it? And people just don't know what's happening in their own neighborhoods. Wait a minute, we can't possibly be allowing this in California. And you know what? And the bill, I don't know if it almost got overturned, but there was definitely some opposition to it. So to think that here in California we can barely get people get that law passed, I would also be skeptical of 50 to 70% in Hong Kong, as David said.
We're going to take a quick break. Today we are talking about the health of sharks and what is happening around the globe to save sharks. An estimated 100 million are killed, but the number might be higher. It's your call, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on local public radio, KALW San Francisco. Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. You can also send an email anytime to feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at the show's website, yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about the check cashing and payday lending industry. Lenders are charging annual rates of 100%. Sometimes the rates exceed 1,000%. So how is this industry regulated? Who runs these firms? Most of them are owned by the big banks. And what are the alternatives for people without bank accounts? That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the importance of sharks, which have been around for 400 million years. They play a very crucial role in our oceans, and they're in danger of going extinct. Over 100 million sharks are killed every year, mainly for their highly prized fins. And we're talking about the global campaign to save sharks. We'll talk about what we can do. We're joined today by Skylar Thomas. He's working on The Price of Existence. It's a film that exposes misinformation, politics, corruption, and financial influences that continue to plague the great white shark. David McGuire is founder of the ocean health and shark conservation nonprofit, Shark Stewards. It's now under the umbrella of the Earth Island Institute. And we'd love to hear from you. How much do you know about sharks? Unlike dolphins and whales, they're not smiley creatures. Well, they can be, but a lot of people are afraid of sharks because of movies like Jaws. And so if you work with sharks, if you work with conservation groups or ocean groups, what are your thoughts on awareness and how that might change what we're currently facing? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Batya in Santa Cruz. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. I was concerned about the fishermen that are making a living here, as is often the case with environmental issues. We pit the labor against environmentalists, and I'm just wondering if there's been any effort to help them get a different kind of living, and also what else can we do personally to help those fishermen or help the situation in general. So thank you very much. I'll take my call off the air.
All right. Thank you for calling in. David, do you want to take that first, talking about the fishermen?
Sure. I mean, that's a complicated issue, but and also kind of a broad category, fishermen. I mean, there are a lot of very healthy and well-managed fisheries in California. There are only a couple shark fisheries, commercial shark fisheries, and those are down in Southern California. I think more of the concern is the impacts of the fishery not only on the fish that are being fished, but the other fish that are, it's called bycatch, like sharks. I think one of the things that we're trying to do is alter gear in Southern California where there's gill nets, and gill nets kill the fish that they're trying to target, which is primarily swordfish, tuna. There's also a sea bass fishery, but increasingly they're starting to target thresher sharks and mako sharks. But they're also killing whales, dolphins, sea turtles, and it's you know, they're banned on the high seas by the UN. So we really should, as Californians, look at this fishery very closely to protect not only the fish, but also the other animals, which in turn is going to protect the fishermen. And you can't blame the environmentalists for putting fishermen out of business. You really have to blame the consumer and sometimes the fishermen for putting them out of business. So if we want a sustainable fishery, we need to look at better management and better consumption. So choosing what fish are sustainable and are properly managed and caught. It's a much greater issue on the high seas and the international oceans.
What would you add to that, Skylar? And how do you talk to locals about these issues?
How do I talk to locals about these issues? Well, now that I'm dedicating myself to it full time, I try to have as many public events as I can. And also put out little mini films on the web that might be, you know, you can't give people too much information.
Right. I'm specifically talking about the fishermen.
The fishermen? All right. I got a good example. So I don't think that we can fathom 73 million. When you hear a number like that, it's just like, oh, wow, that sounds bad. Mm. But I want to give people a visual. I was in Cape Cod. I was following a white shark story there, but I happened to be on the pier and watched the small fishing vessels come in, and they were unloading like trash, giant trash dumpsters worth of corpses of sharks. They weren't white sharks. I believe they were smooth hounds. But dumpster after load after load just dumped. And that was one boat from a quote-unquote small boat. And they come in all day. And it's horrifying to watch. Now, escalate that times a boat 20 times that size that goes out to sea for months with massive miles of nets behind it. And now imagine that these fishing boats understand that they're going to get a lot more money for a fin than for a body. So the bodies are left behind in the ocean. And when you find out that they're bringing in tons of fins, that's tons of fins, not shark bodies.
And that's 4% of the body mass.
Right. I mean, that's a pretty ugly visual, and even that's pretty hard for me to comprehend. Yes, the fisherman thing is quite complicated, because obviously for someone to come in and say, hey, you have to stop making a living the way that you are accustomed to making a living doesn't seem very fair. But what I have to question is, what does making a living mean? At what point are we going to accept that we have to change life as we know it? Does making a living mean 50 grand a year, 100 grand a year, 200 grand a year? You know, can you cut back on the amount of fish that you're dumping off in the port every day?
Well, and then we haven't even talked about the health of the shark itself, because so much of the conversation focuses on the fish, the fins, and the bodies being dumped back. But studies show that sharks have among the highest levels of mercury and other dangerous toxins found in fish. Even the U.S. Food and Drug Administration say that sharks have one of the highest levels of mercury among all fish and shellfish analyzed. So, David, what about the overall health of the shark?
Yeah, we don't often think about the health of the shark. That's a really good point. I mean, there was just a study on white sharks, great white shark young, that are popped down in the Southern California Bight, and they have six times the mercury and cadmium levels in their flesh than other species. So clearly, I mean, mercury is a reproductive toxin. It's a neurotoxin. It can't be good for the shark. And you know, we don't think about the health of the sharks. We think about the health of the humans that are eating the shark, and it is inadvisable, especially if, for pregnant women or children, to eat this high-mercury fish. But, yeah, it's got to be having a huge impact, including organotoxins. So they're facing threats not only from direct impacts from fishing, killing them, or killing them for their fins, but they're also being impacted indirectly through pollutants and also habitat loss. I mean, here in the San Francisco Bay, we have a remnant of our eelgrass beds and wetlands remaining, and that's habitat for many species of sharks. So it is an overall impact. It's a 1-2 punch rather than just, we're not just overfishing them, we're impacting them in many other ways.
And because they have the highest levels of mercury and other toxins found in fish, what does this tell us about the health of the ocean and other fish?
The ocean is sick. And that's really why we use sharks at Shark Stewards as symbols of ocean health. And by protecting sharks and protecting other fish, hopefully we can realize what we're doing to our oceans. Over 50% of our coral reefs are completely degraded or gone. Sylvia Earle says we have 50% left, so we have 50% more to fight for. But we really do need to fight for the ocean. And for us, sharks are those symbols. I mean, white sharks are sexy. They get our attention. I mean, Jaws. I knew Peter Benchley, and he spent the last three decades of his life trying to undo what Spielberg did, really. Mm. Not so much Peter's book, Jaws, which was an excellent book. I love it. I love the movie. If you look at it as a mockumentary, if you will, that it's not a true story. There are people out there fighting for sharks and fighting for the health of the ocean. And we need to think about this. 70% of our oxygen comes from the ocean. If we start killing the ocean, we're killing humanity.
Can you talk, Skylar, just briefly before we go back to calls, about the significance of sharks being at the top of the food chain in virtually every part of every ocean?
Well, being at the top of the food chain, they are tasked by nature to regulate other populations. And an important difference between animals at the top of the food chain, like a shark, and, let's say, a salmon that's a little lower down, is that by design, they're not meant to reproduce the same way. Because if we had the same number of sharks out there going around eating other fish, then all the fish would be gone. So when you talk about wiping out that many sharks, you don't have the recovery opportunity that other animals do.
And why is that?
Why is that? Because, well, let's take the salmon example again. I don't study salmon, so I don't know what the exact numbers are, but, you know, you're talking about tons of them fertilizing their eggs. And so if you lay off of them for a little while, then it's feasible that those populations will recover. Now, when you talk about a shark that gives a handful of pups a year, if it manages to survive long enough to even give birth, well, that's just a couple of new sharks. And if you remove those animals that are supposed to be keeping the animals underneath them in balance, then that balance is broken. Then the balance underneath of that one is broken, and the balance underneath that one is broken. And you see coral reefs dying, and it's because of the removal of sharks. So that's hard to fathom when you first hear it, because you're like, what does a shark have to do with coral? But there's a system out there. And I think David probably can explain it even better than me.
David?
Well, I mean, I think that was pretty well said. it's all integrated, but sharks being at the top of the food chain as apex predators control the next level of predators, which controls the next level of predators or herbivores down all the way to the base of the food chain. So by managing the top and also the bottom-up effects, we can keep the system integrated and whole. So we need to look at it as an entire ecosystem, not just species by species, which is what we've done in California under the Marine Life Protection Act, our marine protected areas, look at ecosystems. The problem with sharks is sharks don't have passports. Sharks don't stay in that marine protected area. They move out of it. Sharks are more vulnerable to overfishing because, as Skyler said, they're at the top. They're more evolved like a mammal, actually, the big sharks. So late onset of reproduction, very few young. Many of these species only live 30 years, maybe 40 years at most. For example, a white shark, a female white shark, she might be able to get pregnant at 12 years old. It's a year gestation, 12 to 18-month gestation period, so they can only get pregnant every other year at best. They'll have 1 to 2 pups. If there's a 50% survival rate, she can have maybe 7 to 10 successful reproductive events in her lifetime if, as Skylar said, she is able to reproduce at all before she ends up on the end of a hook or in a bowl of soup. So they are very vulnerable to overfishing. Tuna can have billions of eggs in their lifetime. Sharks might be able to have 30 or 40 babies in their lifetime, some more, but they are more vulnerable just because of their evolutionary design. So 400 million years of perfection is suddenly working against them because of humans impacting them.
And let's not forget, it's not just humans sharks are up against. Obviously, what we're doing is the worst of anything else they face in the ocean, but they also have their own natural predators and obstacles to go through as they're growing up out in the wild. So cut the number down even smaller.
That is Skylar Thomas. He's working on The Price of Existence, a film that exposes misinformation, politics, corruption, and financial influences that plague the great white shark. David McGuire is founder of the ocean health and shark conservation nonprofit Shark Stewards, now under the umbrella of the Earth Island Institute. And today we're talking about the health of sharks and what they face. Sadly, according to the journal Marine Policy, an estimated 100 million sharks are killed by humans every year, mainly for their highly prized fins. You might remember that in 2011, we did a few shows about this. California became the fourth state in the country to ban the sale and possession of shark fins. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions about sharks, if you'd like to talk about maybe some of the work you do, or if you've been affected by, we actually have a caller. Oh, I believe he couldn't stand the line, but he's Chinese and said he grew up with shark fin soup and had a comment. Actually, he's back, and we'll take him in a minute. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. But first, let's hear from Chris in Albany. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hi. A quick question. You had mentioned that the ecological niche that sharks hold is actually crucial. And I'd like you, if you could say a little bit more about why they're crucial, what they do, why what they do is crucial, and how we actually depend on them for, you know, to keep our the fish stocks that we eat going. Can something
sure?
More
thank
about
you,
that?
Skyler.
Well, there are a lot of species of sharks. Last number I heard was somewhere between 450 to 500 species, and they obviously each have a different role of the animal that they're intended to eat. So all across the globe, they're carrying out these roles, and it affects that local ecosystem differently. Now, I can tell you that with my own eyes, when I go around trying to film sharks, recently I've gone to places and then I've asked the dive charter, hey, I want to go to this location where there are sharks, or in this location where there are sharks. And they're like, oh, sorry, there aren't sharks there anymore. I mean, can you imagine saying that about anything else? They're gone.
Where is this?
That specific example was in Mexico. But not only are the sharks gone, but then you see that something else has happened. You either have a population of another fish that has exploded and the reef looks terrible, or the entire area has gone lifeless. David?
Yeah, I mean, to answer the caller's question, using a terrestrial example, let's use the wolves in Yellowstone. They are the apex predator. They were controlling the tule elk. We shot the wolves because they were killing the cows, or there were threats or fears that they would eat humans. And suddenly the tule elk population exploded. It started eating all the grasses. It started eating the bark off the trees. Suddenly that ecosystem became less diverse and less abundant. So if you remove the apex predator, if you remove a shark from a coral reef, it's taking that predatorial pressure off that next level. And it in turn, for example, simple sharks eat groupers. Groupers eat parrotfish. Parrotfish eat coral. Suddenly the grouper population explodes because there's no longer any sharks. Then they eat all the parrotfish, and then the coral suddenly is dead. Or covered with algae. So there's this cascade effect by removing this top predator that's like a house of cards. There's a domino effect all the way down to the base of the food chain. And sharks, it's a broad category. You know, some sharks aren't apex predators. Some are scavengers. Some are muckivores. You know, leopard sharks, they're not the top of the food chain. They eat worms and clams. But they're still important in that role.
Well, and there's a great film that explores these issues called Shark Water, and I believe you can watch it online for free if you just search Shark Water, one word. A really great film. Thank you for calling in, Chris. Let's go next to Poshun in Emeryville. Hi, Poshun. Welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning. I was, I'm very interested in your program, but I was wondering whether you would consider another deterrent for people not consuming shark's fin soup. I'm Chinese, and I've had my fair share of shark's fin. But the main deterrent for many people, I have found that most of the restaurants that serve shark's fin soup or have served it in the U.S. serve fake shark's fin. Because it's very easy to duplicate. Shark's fin actually does not have a taste. It's like a hard jelly. That's one of the main reasons, I think, people are not drinking it.
And there's a lot of information now about it having no nutritional value.
No nutritional value, exactly.
Poshun, are you still in touch with friends and family in China?
Yes, some.
Are you finding that opinions about shark fin soup are changing in China?
Well, I think so, because people were suspicious about the if it's original.
Right. Well, thank you for calling. David, what about that? Poshun says a lot of the fin soup is actually fake now.
Well, there is faux shark fin soup, and I think probably there are definitely some restaurants that are discreditable or trying to dupe their customers by serving faux shark fin soup. But I would question whether truly most of it is faux. We definitely know that the shark fins were coming in to our ports 2 tons a year. I've been in Chinatown and seen shark fin soup here in San Francisco. So shark fin was consumed here. It's illegal now. I mean, we were one of the original sponsors of AB 376 that is in full effect now. But there definitely was real shark fin in many of these restaurants. And there was a poll, a survey done, actually, about the number of restaurants that actually served it. And there was an investigation when we had students that would go in and actually verify that this is real shark fin. So, you know, I think he's right, and I would be happy if most of it was faux shark fin soup, because it would be healthier for the consumer, and it'd also be healthier for the ocean.
All right, thank you for calling, Poshoon. Let's hear next from Sandra in Oakland. Hi, Sandra.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I have a question about, and I'll take my answer off the air, so I just kind of want to go through this. I want to know how the shark dies. I don't have a pathology around this. I just want to know, just for more awareness, and what happens to the dead body? Does somebody eat it? And is there any socialization around the animal dying, like with elephants? Mm. And I know crows, but also, I really appreciate bringing more attention to this, because it's reminding me of some program about the elephants in Kenya. So thank you for bringing our more awareness to this.
All right. Okay? Thank you. And it's a nice thank you for the question. Skylar, do you want to take that?
All right. What was her first question?
She wanted to know, you know, what happens to the, well, first off, what happens to the body?
Well, some people eat the body. You can see pictures of sharks on display at restaurants, but the body sinks to the bottom of the ocean.
Do other fish eat the body?
Not necessarily other fish, but yeah, sure. You know, things get eaten in the ocean. Nature takes advantage of opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Do we know if sharks respond like elephants do to the dead bodies?
No is a tricky word. There are definitely theories. For example, when a shark that was tagged in South Africa died, supposedly all the sharks spooked out of the area, and some people think that that was chemicals being given off. And same thing happened at the Farallon Islands when the orca killed the great white shark. And again, all the sharks that were tagged were shown to disperse from the area.
David, anything to add there?
Well, I think the analogy of elephants, elephant ivory, is very much akin to shark fin. These animals are killed for their body parts alone, and that's what's causing the destruction of the species. Most shark meat is really not that palatable. Some sharks are edible, and for example, in poor countries, like we were working in the Philippines, the California Academy of Sciences, we did this huge expedition, and in 1,000 dives, we only saw 2 sharks, and those were house reef sharks. And we went into the market, and they eat the bodies. They sell the fins, but these poor countries eat everything. That's a problem too, right? Population is a huge problem when it comes to the oceans and the fate of the ocean. Mm. But other countries that have the luxury or have the regulations against it will actually kill the sharks just for their fins, because they can smuggle them. They're easily transported. They're light. And they're high value. So Skylar said earlier, enforcement is very difficult, even when we have the regulations. So I think education is really part of the key, educating the consumers. You know, to answer the question also, the sharks die. They bleed to death or they suffocate. The large sharks need to keep swimming to keep oxygen flowing past their gills. So you cut the fins off, it's like cutting a human's arm off and throwing them in the water. So they die. Yeah, are they consumed? Yeah, microbes consume them. Crabs, maybe other sharks will eat them, but that doesn't make it right, because you're killing too many of the sharks. It's not okay just throw the body and say, oh, it's not going to be wasted, it's going to be eaten.
So we just have a few minutes left, and the problem here, we're finding that we're getting laws passed, or you're all getting laws passed, but there's not much enforcement. So Skylar, I mean, what else can, in just a minute, can you tell us, what else are you uncovering about why this is really happening?
Why it's really happening, I don't know if I can summarize that.
Well, you said that it goes back to money.
Yeah, it does. I mean, when researchers change their statements because of their sponsors, when politicians change, when somebody calls something that is clearly not sustainable sustainable. When boats that are caught red-handed fishing for animals that they're not supposed to be fishing for get away with a slap on the wrist at best. There's either more money in doing the wrong thing, or there's not enough money enforcing the right thing. And I think both are happening.
So what can we do about this? David, what do you think's most, you think about that, Skylar. David, what do you think is most effective?
Well, I think the conversation we're having right now, we're on the radio talking about sharks. That didn't happen 10 years ago.
Right.
People are more interested. And shark, you tie that into the rest of the ocean. We can change our legislators' mind. We did this in California. You can make a difference. We can change the UN's mind. We can change other countries through economic pressures. So I think the more power that we have as consumers, as people who care about the ocean, can protect sharks and can influence policy. I mean, we call this Sharktober. So we've been celebrating sharks for the past 6 or 7 years, and really that started with AV376. So I've reached probably 10,000 people in the Bay Area this month through public speaking, through films. This Friday I'm going to swim for sharks 3.5 miles around Alcatraz to raise awareness for sharks, that sharks are cool, that these are shark-inhabited waters. That's a great thing. They're not shark-infested.
Yeah, I hesitated because...
Change our approach to the ocean.
You know, I'm sorry we're out of time, but we'll have you back, Skylar, when your film is done. And again, you can find more information about Skylar's film, Skylar Thomas, Working on the Price of Existence. It's a film that exposes the politics, corruption, and financial influences that plague the great white shark. David McGuire is founder of the ocean health and shark conservation nonprofit Shark Stewards. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. What does today's check cashing and payday lending industry look like? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about firms that provide short-term high-interest loans intended to tide borrowers over until their next paycheck. Lenders charge annual rates of 100% or more. How is payday lending regulated? Who runs these firms? And what are the alternatives for people without bank accounts? Join the conversation and call in with your questions on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David LaTulipe is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.